Hey there, this is Tom from the future. I'm whispering because time travel requires whispering. I don't know if you've listened to the newest episodes in order to find this out, but with the holidays here, there is a brand new thing that Patreon is doing where you can gift subs, which is really cool because that means a few different things. First of all, if you know somebody else who enjoys this show, you can get them a sub to whatever tier you want for whatever amount of time. So if you look at certain rewards and you think it would be really cool to get them those rewards, or just being part of the community, or even just getting ad-free episodes, that's something you can give this holiday season. Also, it means that if you've been wanting to sign up for the Patreon and you haven't been able to, and you want to ask for it as a gift from somebody else, then that can work as well. So both of those things are options. All that you have to do is go to Patreon, log in, or create an account. You can just create a free account. You don't have to sign up with anybody, anyone's Patreon. And then you go to the Patreon page for this show and you choose to gift a thing. You go through all the little options and you send them a gift. It's really simple. It would be super helpful to us. And it's a fun thing to give. So hope you consider that, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday. All right, let's get back to the show.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning.
When we first started our close look at The Hobbit, one thing I mentioned was about how this book, this story, develops over time, and how it starts off very much as a fairy tale, a story that you could tell to children, something with these common fairy tale motifs in a setting that feels very familiar to most of the audience who would be reading it. Rolling hillsides, comfortable homes, a people who are happy to stay where they are and don't go off on adventures very much. But by the time we get to the end of the book, this is a very different story. It's as if it grows up, just like Bilbo's understanding of the world. There's a maturing that happens, not only to Bilbo, but to the story itself, and maybe even we as the audience go through this. This isn't uncommon in coming-of-age stories, but Bilbo here is an adult. Now, he may be little like a child and naive like a child, but he's an adult. And we, the readers, are aware, I would think, at least in today's world, of the way fantasy stories work and where this story might go. But think back to the 1930s. Were those readers aware of where a story like this, a fairy tale, can lead? And how do we know that the story is growing up? Well, there are tonal changes, and the language develops as the story goes on. The comedy kind of softens. It isn't as direct as it is at the beginning of the story. But one of the things I want to point out today, and I want you to pay attention to as we deal with these goblins and the dangers of this cave, is violence. In the beginning of the story, there are hints of violence. There are dangers that come about, whether that is the jostling of Bilbo's plates and the potential breaking of the things that he cares about, or the more severe dilemma with the trolls, which is solved in a mostly non-violent sort of way. But here we are, in a cave, surrounded by goblins, with weapons and with a reason to want to enslave or murder the party. The stakes have grown. The severity has increased. The danger is much more present here than it's been at any other point in the story. And sometimes, when you're stuck, surrounded by goblins, you have to pull out a sword. The yells and yammering, croaking, gibbering and jabbering, howls, growls and curses, shrieking and shrieking that followed were beyond description. Several hundred wild cats and wolves being roasted slowly alive together would not have compared with it. The sparks were burning holes in the goblins, and the smoke that now fell from the roof made the air too thick for even their eyes to see through. Soon they were falling over one another and rolling in heaps on the floor, biting and kicking and fighting as if they had all gone mad. This is the situation that plays out just as all the lights go out. Something mysterious happens, and all of a sudden the tables are turned. The goblins are no longer in control of the situation. And we know who is chained up here. All of the dwarves and Bilbo. And we know who is left behind. So it shouldn't be a surprise as to who is coming to the rescue here. But Tolkien plays it out like it might be. And for a young reader, it might. They may not have been thinking about Gandalf. Or they may have seen the dilemma as so dangerous to the party that they wouldn't have considered how they might ever have been able to escape. And notice here the way that Tolkien uses the words to make it mysterious. Suddenly a sword flashed in its own light. This is interesting because this could mean a sword being removed from its sheath, and maybe it's a metal sheath, so it creates some sort of spark, or it could be a sword hitting another sword or piece of metal, creating sparks. But we already know that there are swords in this world that shine in their own light, especially in the presence of goblins. And we're told that Bilbo saw it go right through the great goblin. He was standing there, dumbfounded, and it says, in the middle of his rage. Now, immediately, we get this mysterious smoke and lights and a sword that comes out of nowhere, and the goblins start shrieking and running around. And very quickly, almost anticlimactically, we have the death, the stabbing of the great goblin. And we're told here very specifically, there is no ambiguity here about what happens after the goblin is stabbed by the sword. It's not like, well, did he get wounded and survive? No. The very next line says, he fell dead. And of course, the next thing that happens, all of the soldiers, all of the goblins that were surrounding him with weapons, ready to lop off the head of a dwarf at a moment's notice because the dwarves could not fight back. As soon as this happens and their great goblin king is dead, they run away into the darkness. This reinforces the idea that goblins are cowards. They only like it when they have the upper hand, and when they don't, they flee in terror. The sword gets put away, and we hear a voice that's described as fierce and quiet say, follow me quick. Now, I find it interesting that this quote does not say follow me quickly, just follow me quick. And maybe that denotes some change in the way that we use language from then to now, or maybe Gandalf, we know this is Gandalf, is speaking quickly, and so he just quickly says, follow me quick, as a way to motivate them. And we also are clued back into the fact here that Bilbo doesn't really understand what's happening. He's never been in a situation like this. The closest thing to an actual fight that he's ever been in was with the trolls, and that wasn't that long ago. He's very confused by everything that's happening, and yet he runs along with the dwarves as fast as he can, and yet he can't keep up. His little hobbit legs are too short. And at the front of this party is the character who jumped down here in the scene, who we haven't been told about yet, who has a pale light. And it's described that a pale light was leading them on. And this is another thing to notice. It doesn't say the person who jumped down and stabbed the great goblin was leading them on with a pale light so that they could see. The pale light itself was leading them on, a light in the darkness, a source of good. And remember when, in the previous episode, I talked about how Tolkien specifically called Gandalf the Wizard when he was doing wise things and used his name when he was doing Gandalf things. In this situation, we're just given a pale light leading them on. I think that's intentional. And then the voice says, quicker and quicker, the torches will soon be relit. And again, we're just told this is a voice. And then Dory notices that Bilbo is not able to keep up. And we're told that he was a decent fellow. And I love this line here. He made the hobbit scramble onto his shoulders as best he could with his tied hands. And then off they all went at a run with a clink clink of chains and many a stumble since they had no hands to steady themselves with. And here we have the description about what happens so that Bilbo can keep up. Dory, one of the dwarves, picks him up and is able to carry him along. And he's much smaller and lighter, so he's probably not too much of a burden because dwarves are strong and surprisingly fast, which we hear about in a little bit. Beyond just that, we have the way that this sentence is constructed here. We have the clink clink of chains, this onomatopoeia, but this repetition. And we've seen this before. In the past, I've likened this to something that feels more childlike, and it is kind of a comedic situation. He's stumbling onto the shoulders, they're having a hard time running, the chains clink, clink. I think this might be a play at that humorous tone that Tolkien has used in the story so far in order to kind of lighten the dire situation, but it doesn't feel as powerful in this situation. And you might be able to look back at that first paragraph I read with the gibbering and jabbering, howls, growls, and curses. There's this rhyming, almost poetic quality to the sounds that they're making, the onomatopoeia of it all. Well, such a wonderful word. And yet, I'm not sure if that is done in a way that is supposed to feel sing-songy and fairy tale-like, is supposed to lighten the mood, but I don't know if it works as well here. Kind of is a dire situation. This is a life or death situation where they are surrounded in a dark cave by a bunch of enemies who are trying to murder them. Especially for the mind of a young reader, this would be a terrifying situation. Anybody with children knows that when children go to bed and it's dark, one of the first things they'll complain about is how scary the dark is. This is a natural human instinct. This is something that developed in humanity in order to make sure that we didn't wander out by ourselves into the wilderness and get attacked by feral cats or something even more dangerous. This is something very human and very deeply scary. And yet Tolkien is trying to, at least I think, make this lighter in some way. Now, does it work the same way it worked earlier here? I'm not sure it does. I think this situation is much more dire. And then we're told that this goes on for a while. For a long while, they did not stop. And they might have been right down in the very mountain's heart. The heart of the mountain is a very Tolkien kind of phrase. I think if I'm remembering correctly, later on in the book, we also hear the heart of the mountain when it comes to the Arkenstone and Eriador. And yet in this situation, it's not said so much in a place of comfort and strength, like the dwarves delve to the heart of the mountain where they set their kingdom, you know, like that sort of thing. Here, I think it's meant to explain that they are very, very deep underground. And that's really the sense of it. This is so much further from the surface than they ever expected to go. And then we get the reveal. Then Gandalf lit up his wand. And we get that word wand here again. And you're going to see that a number of times. It's not his staff. It's not his walking stick. It is his wand. They are all the same thing. They just go by different names when they're doing a different function. Now, something else that's particularly interesting here is that it says, then Gandalf lit up his wand. And yet we were already given a pale light to lead them on. which my assumption after reading this and then rereading this and rereading this again was that Gandalf's wand, or his staff, as we would generally call it, was already lit. And that's what was leading them on. And yet we get no description for this, or explanation, I guess I could say, because it's not until two paragraphs later that we get, then Gandalf lit up his wand like it was done for the first time. Notice what isn't said here is Gandalf made his wand brighter. It says lit up, which I assume means to have done this for the first time. So if that's the case, what was the pale light that was leading them on? Makes you wonder. And then the very next sentence says, of course it was Gandalf, because I think at this point Tolkien would have known that he was playing with us by not saying who or what was going on, but in fact, most of us would have guessed by now that was Gandalf. And then he decides to leave some things mysterious. Tolkien, that is. He doesn't describe to us exactly how Gandalf was able to follow them, how he was able to get through the door, the stone door that had kind of slid shut, how he was able to keep up with them and not be discovered, how he was able to even just kind of enter the scene with all the lights around and all the goblins around, and yet nobody noticed him until he plays this trick on them with the smoke and the lights and the sparks. And again, this goes back to his ability to manage fire and this idea that he has previously been known for his fireworks in the Shire. All of this connects. It makes sense that Gandalf would have used those tricks or maybe that magic, depending on how Gandalf managed these things, which isn't described, in order to create that situation. And yet, Tolkien takes kind of the easy way out here, but I think if we look at this as the easy way out, that we're kind of missing something. Leaving mystery around how Gandalf actually does some of what he does is part of what makes him an interesting character. It's also part of what defines a wizard. A wizard doesn't reveal their secrets. They are supposed to be mysterious. We, just like Bilbo or the dwarves, don't know exactly how Gandalf's magic works, or if he's using some other form of trickery or technology. Who knows? And the fact that Gandalf just isn't revealed here, I think, is a positive thing for the story. It creates wonder. And this is something you see in a lot of other stories where certain details are just never revealed. They're all hinted at, but they're never really revealed. And that creates a much more realistic feeling situation, because that's the way the real world works most of the time. Most of the time, we don't really know all the details or all the facts. We're left to wonder about things. And so it says here, just then they were too busy to ask how he got there. They don't even get the opportunity to ask, because the situation is too dire. Now he takes out his sword, and it flashes in the dark by itself. Now this also means that that pale light that was leading them on may not have been his sword either, because his sword was put away. And I love this line. It burned with a rage that made it gleam if goblins were about. The fact that the sword is given an emotion in the way that it burns, the way that it lights up, and that it's with rage, implies this concept that magic items may have their own intent. This is something made very real in our understanding of the ring, especially in The Lord of the Rings. But that concept is already being played with here in The Hobbit. And of course, The Hobbit wasn't the first thing that he wrote. He'd already been working a lot of the stories from The Silmarillion and The Lost Tales and all of that stuff. But this idea that magic items, not only Sauron's ring or the rings of power, but magic items in generally are somehow imbued with their own feeling, their own personality. Think about Turin's black blade. It has a very similar quality to about it. It drinks his blood at the end of the story and seems to enjoy it. Now, is this the natural personification that people place on items and objects and animals around them to make them feel more human and approachable? Or is this something that actually comes from the magic or the magic item itself? It's never quite explained, as far as I know, when it comes to these other items. But it is interesting. And that unexplained mystery really does work, at least for me. And we get some more descriptions about this weapon. But before that, we have to go thank our patrons, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. So if you are interested in learning more about Glamdring and like these other magic weapons and stuff, we're going to talk about that in the bonus episode this week. So tune in for that. Join us on Patreon, patreon.com/LOTR Lorecast for all of that stuff. You can get ad-free episodes. You can also get, of course, the bonus episodes. All of that stuff is available, and there's a ton of it because the show's been going for a while now. So even for a little bit of a subscription, you can get access to a lot of stuff. And we have to welcome our newest patrons who have now gained access to a lot of this stuff, whether it's ad-free episodes or bonus episodes or both or anything else that's on there. Go check it out. So Douglas S, XDXD, Chris O, Carly O, Norbert B, and Taylor B, welcome to the Patreon. Thank you so much for signing up. So glad that you are here. And I also have to shout out our VIP patrons. Let's go through the list as quick as I can. AK Music Lover, Apollo, Aragorn III, Atle Morton, Azul Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Christopher E, Courtney S, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Fulcrum, George B, Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Gemma D, Jezzer, Katie S, Capenna, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Nick K, Nostrils of Sauron, Richard J, Rivqua, Rosie Rose, Saruman the Stinky, TJT, and Tour Son of Hur 97. I did it. I got through the whole thing. I think I didn't mess up at all of that. Thank you so much, everybody. You guys are the best. Also, we have some reviews that came in. This one from Annie Fan in Ireland, who writes pronunciation 5 stars. Tom, I love the show, but I noticed you struggle with some of the names, and then posted a whole bunch of stuff about how to explain or how to actually say a lot of the different odd names and sounds and things that show up in Tolkien. Thank you so much for that. I have looked at all of this stuff before, but to say that these things stick in my mind very easily would be clearly untrue. I've done the best. I hope I've improved over time with pronouncing some of these things. But part of the difficulty is the fact that I was reading these stories as a child and as a teenager during a time when YouTube didn't exist. And so you couldn't just look up things online about pronunciation or have heard it. Heck, I was reading this stuff before the trilogy, before the movies, the Lord of the Rings movies came out, and we actually got some of the pronunciation of some of these words in the movies that were done to the way that Tolkien would have pronounced them. I didn't have that available when I first read these things. And as you know, when you learn to pronounce things from reading and you just kind of got to go with it in your head, it kind of gets burned into your brain. And you'll notice I still slip up on some of these things I know better, like Turin instead of Turin, you know, those kinds of things. But I'm doing my best. Thank you for your patience with that, and thank you for the update, and I'll continue to try to improve. We also have this one from Gabilam95 in the US, who writes, great podcast. I downloaded Apple Podcasts so I could write this review. Thanks for doing that. Thank you for jumping through the hoops to do that. That really does mean a lot. I've always been an LOTR fan, but had only ever watched the movies. This year, I finally started listening to the audiobooks read by Andy Serkis. Highly recommended, by the way. Yeah, I've heard they're very, very good. I just finished The Hobbit and have started Fellowship. I had to take a break from the Fellowship because I ran out of my listening hours on Spotify, but still wanted to fill my time with Lord of the Rings content. Spotify recommended this podcast to me, so I gave it a try. From the first episode, Robots made it so engaging and easy to follow. His enthusiasm for the content matches my own. It has made my drive to work in the mornings and home more enjoyable. Thank you, Robots, for the content, and I hope to be a patron in the near future. Well, that would be awesome. Please let me know if you do sign up, and I'll, of course, welcome you. And hopefully you'll use the same username, because I never know. People have different names. But thank you for your support, and thank you for taking the time to leave the reviews. Also, thank you for rating the show on Spotify and sharing it with your friends. And oh, and by the way, there's a new feature on Patreon just in time for Christmas. You can gift patron subscriptions. So if that's something that you would want to do, if you have somebody in your family who would absolutely love to be able to access the bonus episodes or whatever, It's give them a subscription, even if it's just for a month or two, because that would give them access to so much extra content. It would help me out. And I think that's actually a really wonderful feature, because there are definitely times in my life where I was like, oh, I know somebody who would love this, but I wasn't able to give it to them so easily. So go check that out. Patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. All right. I've yammered on too long. Let's get back to the rest of the story. Here we go. Now it was bright as blue flame for delight in the killing of the great lord of the cave. This I also find very interesting, because it was burning with rage. It is now bright with blue flame for delight. It kind of implies that it may change color, but I think blue is the only actual color we get described, at least as far as I've noticed in the rereading. I'll have to pay attention to if that changes. I'm pretty sure it's almost always blue, but the fact that it is delighted in the killing of the great goblin and is still enjoying this. They've been running for a while, but it's still lit up. And then we learn a little bit more about it. It made no trouble whatever, of cutting through the goblin chains and setting all the prisoners free as quickly as possible. And I have to wonder if that is due to its nature as a magical elf-crafted weapon from two ages previous, or if maybe the blue flame of delight was empowering it in a way where it can actually cut its way through the metal, because it would be very difficult to cut metal chains with a metal sword. Maybe something's going on there, but I also love the idea that this sword is still sharp after centuries, or millennia, actually. Millennia being hidden away is somehow still sharp. Now, maybe they sharpened it up in Rivendell, probably was something that they would have done, but I don't remember a specific description about them doing that. So if you do, then please chime in, correct me, but I'm pretty sure that wasn't specifically noted. Then we get the name of the sword, Glamdring, the Foe Hammer, if you remember, because it's being reminded to us that this was brought up before, and the fact that the goblins call it Beater and hated it worse than Biter, if possible. This sword is worse to them. Somehow they have a memory of it that means that they can distinguish it from the other one, and yet this one is worse. Beater is worse than Biter. And then we learn Orcrist too had been saved, for Gandalf had brought it along as well, snatching it from one of the terrified guards. So in the middle of all that commotion, Gandalf remembers to still do that as well. And then we're told Gandalf thought of most things, and though he could not do everything, he could do a great deal for friends in a tight corner. So we're reminded, Gandalf is very powerful. He can do a lot, but he can't do it all. Then he hands the sword back to Thorin with a bow, because, of course, he's respectful of Thorin's position in this dire moment. We can't forget our politeness. And then they count. They try to find out, okay, did we actually get everybody out? Because they were in such a hurry, they didn't have time to count. And at one point, they're like, where's Filly and Killy? And then they're like, oh, here we are. Okay, we got them. We've got everybody. And Mr. Baggins, 14. Then we get this line. Well, well, it might be worse. And then again, it might be a good deal better. No ponies and no food and no knowing quite where we are. And hordes of angry goblins just behind. On we go. Like, there's something kind of comedic about that, about the just the statement of fact of the situation. Well, it's a terrible situation. Could have been worse. Could have been better. We lost all this stuff, but I guess we're still being chased. So let's keep going. You know, just like it's so matter of fact. So the journey continues. They continue running. They are being chased. They hear goblin noises. We learn that poor Bilbo has to get passed around because he can only go about half as fast as the dwarves, and that the dwarves, and it says here, can roll along at a tremendous pace. Roll along is the specific word that Tolkien chooses. Like, we know he doesn't just pick words for no reason. And if you were riding in a car, it would be like, oh, you're rolling along in the car. But I don't think that was the purpose of the use of this word, which leads me in my mind to picture round dwarves rolling around, but I don't think that's actually what is going on there. So maybe this is an older phrase that we have just kind of brought along with us? I'm not really sure. But then we also learned that they took turns carrying Bilbo on their backs, which means they must have been running long enough for each of them to get tired and have to spread the task around in order to carry Bilbo. So the period of time here, and this is something I feel like happens a lot in Tolkien's works, is that time gets kind of truncated in some places and then stretched in others. Time feels like it takes forever when they're walking along a beautiful path and Tolkien is noting all of the trees and flowers along the sides of the road and the history of the building that was the thing that they just passed on the side. During those periods of time, it feels like time is expanding. It's becoming introspective. But during these moments of time of great danger or conflict, I feel like oftentimes the perspective we get is the perspective of the people in it who are overwhelmed by the sheer detail of what's going on and the pace of things. And time starts to feel squished. But that also feels like a very human way to experience those kinds of situations. Because you're so in it and you're so focused in that moment that time goes by very quickly, at least appears to. And so they keep running, and yet we find out that the goblins can run faster than the dwarves. They also can see better in the dark. They're more familiar with the cave. So that makes sense. And then they're growling and they're angry at them. We can hear the flap of their feet. The dwarves are getting tired. And then we get Bilbo again, lamenting the fact that he is not back in his hobbit hole, reminding us of the danger that he's in and the fact that this is a miserable situation for the Baggins side of his personality. Well, for both sides of his personality, it's not pleasurable, but especially the Baggins side. It's reinforcing to him, why did you ever leave? And maybe because we've seen this happen before, we get kind of a comedic response to this. Bilbo says out loud, why, oh, why did I ever leave my hobbit hole? And then we get, why, oh, why did I ever bring a wretched little hobbit on a treasure hunt? Says Bomber. Poor Bomber, by the way, who's staggering along, dripping sweat and in terror of what's about to happen. But then what's about to happen is this. Gandalf and Thorin fall behind. They can tell that the goblins are right at their backs. There was nothing else to be done, and the goblins did not like it. They came scurrying round the corner in full cry and found goblin cleaver and foe hammer shining cold and bright right in their astonished eyes. Notice we do not get the elven names for these weapons because this is coming from the perspective of the goblins, and what the goblins see are goblin cleaver and foe hammer, these legendary weapons that they've probably heard stories about right in front of them. The ones in front drop their torches and give off a yell before they were killed. And the ones behind yelled still more and leapt back, knocking over those that were running after them. Biter and beater, they shrieked. And soon they were all in confusion, and most of them were hustling back to the way they had come. Gandalf understood that the way to deal with goblins is to match them on their level. He knew that they are cowards, and that when being confronted directly with something as dangerous and as historically legendary as these weapons would have an effect. And it did. They turned back. They only had to kill a few, but the rest, again, fled in terror. Then we learn that it was a long time before any of them dared to turn that corner. They were afraid of that corner specifically because that's where they saw Biter and Beater destroying other goblins. And when they finally were able to check out that area, they realized that they needed to change their tactics. Remember, goblins are cowards, but they're clever. They put out their torches, and it says here, they slipped on soft shoes. This idea that they have different kinds of shoes that they can wear is interesting. And they chose out their very quickest runners with the sharpest ears and eyes. They became much more tactical about how they would go about this so that they could sneak up on them, so that they could gain the advantage. Remember, they're cowards. They prefer to have the upper hand. Now, we're also told here that this is why Bilbo, nor the dwarves, nor even Gandalf heard them coming. Nor did they see them. But the goblins could see them because of the light of Gandalf's wand and because of the sound that they were making as they went along. And then we get this last paragraph from chapter 4. Quite suddenly, Dory, now at the back again carrying Bilbo, who I guess has been passed around across all 12 of them at this point, was grabbed from behind in the dark. He shouted and fell, and the hobbit rolled off his shoulders into the blackness, bumped his head on hard rock, and remembered nothing more.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
Hey there, this is Tom from the future. I'm whispering because time travel requires whispering. I don't know if you've listened to the newest episodes in order to find this out, but with the holidays here, there is a brand new thing that Patreon is doing where you can gift subs, which is really cool because that means a few different things. First of all, if you know somebody else who enjoys this show, you can get them a sub to whatever tier you want for whatever amount of time. So if you look at certain rewards and you think it would be really cool to get them those rewards, or just being part of the community, or even just getting ad-free episodes, that's something you can give this holiday season. Also, it means that if you've been wanting to sign up for the Patreon and you haven't been able to, and you want to ask for it as a gift from somebody else, then that can work as well. So both of those things are options. All that you have to do is go to Patreon, log in, or create an account. You can just create a free account. You don't have to sign up with anybody, anyone's Patreon. And then you go to the Patreon page for this show, and you choose to gift a thing. You go through all the little options, and you send them a gift. It's really simple. It would be super helpful to us, and it's a fun thing to give. So hope you consider that, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday. All right, let's get back to the show.